It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Biologists are trying to crack a mystery in rivers around the world. They're trying to figure out why freshwater mussels are dying off.
They're not only cleaning the water, but they're cleaning it in a way that recycles all of the dirt to fuel the bottom of the food chain. The fish are going to suffer, the snails are going to suffer, the crayfish. Nothing will do as well without the mussels around.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The freshwater mussel is nature's river cleaner. But every autumn for 3 years running here in our region, there's been a mass die-off of one of the most important species. Biologists say if this continues, it could be a warning sign for global river ecosystems. Robbie Harris from partner station WYTF reports from the Virginia-Tennessee border.
The Clinch River system in southern Appalachia is world-class, rich with wildlife from pretty much the entire food chain, top to bottom. But it's the bottom that has scientists extremely concerned. A keystone species of freshwater mussel that filters a large portion of these waters is dying by the thousands, and biologists are desperate to find out why.
We're at ground zero. The Clinch River is the best studied example of this.
Tony Goldberg is an infectious disease epidemiologist and a veterinarian from the University of Wisconsin-Madison Vet School, part of a team of people who are investigating what we now know is a global phenomenon of mussel mortality events.
This is happening here in the southeast. It's happening in the Pacific Northwest. It's even happening in Europe. We have collaborators in Spain who have been sending us samples and asking for our help.
Jordan Richard is a biologist with U.S. Fish and Wildlife who studies freshwater mussels in this watershed. He says a die-off like this can happen when pollutants make their way into the water, overwhelming even the mussel's ability to clean it up. But here, where the Powell and Clinch Rivers run undammed down the mountains, the water quality is actually good.
Just based on water quality, it doesn't make sense that that would be the real culprit.
Richard is holding three different mussel species, still wet from the river, shells glistening in the sun, their tissue still white, looks fresh. But a trained biologist knows they're newly dead.
It's not abnormal at a shoal where you have hundreds of thousands of mussels living together on any given day to find one or two that have died recently. But when you see one of these and one of these and 50 of those in like a 10-minute walkthrough of the site, that gives you a clue that something is happening to these.
Richard's referring to the prized pheasant shell mussel, the workhorses of the waters. Larger than most mussel species, they lie almost fully buried in the river bottom, only the tips of their shell sticking up, quickly opening and closing, as though gulping the water as it flows. A single one can filter upwards of 18 gallons of water a day, and they're responsible for the majority of water filtration in any river they inhabit.
We call them the backbone of the ecosystem. They're really useful at sort of making their own habitat better for themselves, but also better for everything else, because they're not only cleaning the water, but they're cleaning it in a way that recycles all of the dirt to fuel the bottom of the food chain. So without the mussels, the fish are going to suffer, the snails are going to suffer, the crayfish. Nothing will do as well without the mussels around.
Richard and Goldberg are now able to time these die-off seasons after 3 years of tracking, and each year, like clockwork, whatever it is, returns to these waters and kills more and more pheasant shell mussels without harming any of the other 46 species of mussels that live here. One theory is that it's a new virus, another that it's some imbalance in the microbiome that affects only this species. And no list of possibilities is complete without this one.
So, I mean, climate change is the 800-pound gorilla in the room, and this could be related to climate change. But we don't have the luxury of saying, well, if we want to save the mussels, we have to fix climate change. We don't have that much time.
Goldberg and Richard think this year's die-off season has peaked, the shells of dead pheasant mussels littering the river's edge. For now, the waters still look pristine on this late fall day. And while declines in abundant species like this one have been seen before, they're normally linked to extremely high spawning events, with too many offspring for all to survive. Unless and until these scientists confirm what's happening, they can only say this is an event unlike any they've yet seen. On the Virginia-Tennessee border, I'm Robbie Harris.
The Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection announced a $650,000 settlement with a natural gas company for record-keeping and well violations at a natural gas storage facility beneath a planned coal mine in Greene County. For State Impact Pennsylvania, the Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier reports.
Equitrans Midstream owns an underground gas storage reservoir called the Swartz Field. It's an old oil and gas formation that lies less than 2,000 feet beneath a coal seam that CONSOL plans to begin mining later this year. According to a consent agreement signed by the company and the DEP, Equitrans had failed to adequately document all wells that had been drilled into the area, presenting a safety risk for the coal mine. As part of the agreement, the company will identify all remaining wells and plug any that it needs to under state law. Reed Frazier, State Impact Pennsylvania.
Today on Halloween, we like to remind West Virginians of the many creatures featured in the state's folklore, such as Bigfoot and Mothman. And there's another one that's often described as an alien or a monster. Over the years, it's become part of the state's pop culture. It's even made a larger resurgence just in the last 4 years through a tourism campaign and a new museum. Our Folklife reporter, Caitlin Tan, brings us the story from Braxton County, West Virginia.
The story of the Flatwoods Monster began September 12, 1952, in the small town of Flatwoods. It was 7 o'clock at night, and some schoolboys were playing football. They saw some kind of object falling from the sky that looked to be on fire, says Andrew Smith. He's somewhat of an expert when it comes to the Flatwoods legend.
Something bright, maybe a fireball, appeared to fly overhead and land on a nearby hilltop.
Andrew's the executive director of the Braxton County Visitor Center, as well as the founder of the Flatwoods Monster Museum, which opened 2 years ago. So, as the original story goes, the boys and two adults hiked up the hill to check out this fireball. There was an overwhelming, rotten egg smell in the air that burned their eyes.
They see movement from their left coming from the woods, and as they shine their light at it,
they saw a 10-foot-tall monster hovering above the ground, spewing smoke and gas at them. Its head was red and spade-shaped, with a distinct point at the top. It had glowing eyes with spindly arms and claws. Its body was covered in some kind of green armor.
Even though it was floating quietly, but also emitting like a shrieking sound.
Everyone ran home and reported it to the police. Other than a lingering smell, there wasn't much evidence left behind. So that's the basic story of the Flatwoods Monster. It was 67 years ago, but people are still talking about it. And over the years, the telling of the story has varied. Some people think there was a government conspiracy involved. Other versions mention a dog that died from the gas that poured out of the monster. There's just something about this story that lets the imagination run wild. And of course, the actual look of the monster is constantly changing. So the Flatwoods Monster Museum has become an epicenter of all the different interpretations of the monster. It's in an old pharmacy building in the small downtown of Sutton, West Virginia. The storefront windows advertise the museum in different languages for that international appeal. Originally, it was supposed to be the Braxton County Visitor Center, but what started as one small shelf of Flatwoods Monster paraphernalia turned into an entire museum.
I would say easily over 95% of our traffic is because we're a Flatwoods Monster Museum, not because we're a visitor center.
The museum is one large room. At the entrance, people are greeted by a life-sized Flatwoods Monster costume. The walls are lined with tall shelves displaying many reinterpretations of the monster, like drawings, figurines, lanterns, stickers, t-shirts, and video games. Some look cute and inviting, while others have evil eyes and bulging muscles. At the back of the room is another life-sized Flatwoods monster made out of a green graduation gown, PVC pipe, and a red circular pizza pan. Another one sits on top of a shelf. It's just the head of the monster, but it's much larger than a human head. Its menacing eyes peer down at guests. It has a bony, dark red face, hollowed out cheekbones, and a grim reaper-like cloak.
I have no idea where that came from.
Andrew says a lot of the collection has been donated by artists and collectors. And the museum has also become a hub for all things spooky in West Virginia. It's a place for people to swap not just Flatwoods monster knowledge, but ghost stories and UFO sightings. Colby White, a Morgantown-based musician, has some merchandise from his band on display. Captain Catfish is a punk band with an Appalachian folk music flair. A lot of their tunes are based on regional folklore, such as Bigfoot, the Yeti, and of course, the Flatwoods Monster.
No phantom of Flatwoods from Moon or from Mars. Maybe from God, not from the stars.
The song is called The Phantom of Flatwoods. It's a traditional West Virginia folk song written at the time of the sighting by a local named Don Lamb. However, Colby arranged the music to it. And he actually has a tattoo of the monster. Most people interpret the tale as scary or evil, but he sees it differently. He thinks the Flatwoods Monster was just taking in its surroundings when a group of kids and their mom approached from behind.
Here comes, like, you know, a bunch of kids and, like, you know, this woman, like, shining a flashlight in this dude's eyes or creature's eyes. Next thing he knows, he's getting blinded and he freaks out and starts vibrating and just, like, basically throws up some sort of weird oil on him. So I think they startled him. That's my theory. I think they startled the Flatwoods Monster.
The monster surprisingly has a Japanese following that Andrew thinks began in the 60s or 80s. It's featured in some older Japanese video games and also made into figurines. They have an anime cartoon look with bright colors and a large toothy mouth. Andrew has used the Flatwoods Monster as a way to try to boost tourism in the area. He even runs online ads in Japanese, which proved to be fruitful. Andrew says a Japanese woman visited the museum last year after seeing the ad.
She had seen this drawing her whole life, but she had no idea it was based in America. She had no idea it was based in West Virginia, but learning that it was, she just did this deep dive into West Virginia.
There are also different names associated with the monster, like the Phantom of Flatwoods, Braxton County Monster, and the Flatwoods Green Monster. Andrew says in a board game, it's referred to as Braxy, with two X's.
Braxy has been a word for maybe 3 years. And how often I hear people using it is pretty amazing. And they use it as if it's old.
There are even handmade wooden chairs painted to look like the monster. All five were built by a local carpenter and are placed throughout Braxton County. They are 10 feet tall with built-in stairs to reach the seat. They look more like a throne. Recently, Andrew also launched a social media campaign using the chairs.
You're actually preserving the history and the memory of the Flatwoods Monster. So you're taking these pictures and putting them on the internet.
Andrew says he believes the group saw something that September night in 1952. Whether it was the Flatwoods Monster, he says he'll leave it up to the imagination. And Colby, the musician, says a part of him would love to spot the monster in the wild, but he also kind of likes the mystery of it all. The unknown. It gives him something to believe in.
Please tell us why you fly over our trees, the end of the world, or an omen of peace.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Caitlin Tan in Braxton County.
Sight of the Phantom was a sight.
This story is part of a recent Halloween episode of Inside Appalachia, which features ghost tales and legends from across the region. Listen at wvpublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.